do it. It's go time.
Welcome to Go Time, your source for wide-ranging discussions from all around the Go community. If you like this show, you'll love the Changelog. It's news on Mondays, deep technical interviews on Wednesdays, and on Fridays, an awesome talk show for your weekend enjoyment. Find us by searching for The Changelog wherever you listen to podcasts. Big thanks to our partners at Fly.io. Launch your app in 5 minutes or less all around the world. Learn how at Fly.io. Okay, here we go.
What's up, friends? I'm here with Kurt Mackey, co-founder and CEO of Fly. As you know, we love Fly. That is the home of changelog.com. But Kurt, I want to know how you explain Fly to developers. Do you tell them a story first? How do you do it?
I kind of change how I explain it based on almost like the generation of developer I'm talking to. So like for me, I built and shipped apps on Heroku, which if you've never used Heroku is roughly like building and shipping an app on Vercel today. It's just, it's 2024 instead of 2008 or whatever. And what frustrated me about doing that was I got stuck. You can build and ship a Rails app with a Postgres on Heroku, the same way you can build and ship a Next.js app on Vercel. But as soon as you want to do something interesting, like as soon as you want to, at the time, I think one of the things I ran into is like, I wanted to add what used to be like kind of the basis for Elasticsearch. I want to do full text search in my applications. You kind of hit this wall with something like Heroku where you can't really do that. I think lately we've seen it with like people wanting to add LLMs kind of inference stuff to their applications on Vercel or Heroku or Cloudflare or whoever these days. They've started like releasing abstractions that sort of let you do this, but I can't just run the model I'd run locally on these black box platforms that are very specialized. For the people my age, it's always like, oh, Heroku was great, but I outgrew it. And one of the things that I felt like I should be able to do when I was using Heroku was like run my app close to people in Tokyo for users that were in Tokyo. And that was never possible. For modern generation devs, it's a lot more Vercel based. It's a lot like Vercel is great right up until you hit one of their hard line boundaries. And then you're kind of stuck. There's the other one. We've had someone within the company, I can't remember the name of this game, but the tagline was like 5 minutes to start, forever to master. That's sort of how we're pitching Fly. Is like you can get an app going in 5 minutes, but there's so much depth to the platform that you're never going to run out of things you can do with it.
So unlike AWS or Heroku or Vercel, which are all great platforms, the cool thing we love here at Changelog most about Fly is that no matter what we want to do on the platform, we have primitives, we have abilities, and we as developers can charge our own mission on Fly. It is a no limits platform built for developers, and we think you should try it out. Go to fly.io to learn more. Launch your app in 5 minutes. Too easy. Once again, fly.io.
Hello, fellow gophers. Go Time's producer and co-host of The Changelog here, Jared Santo. A month ago, I put together an unpopular opinion roundup for 2022. If you like this episode, go back and listen to that one as well. I liked it, so I figured, why wait? We might as well find out who had the most popular and unpopular opinions in 2023. So, let's get right into it. First off, some stats. There were 62 opinions shared last year, down from 76 in 2022. Of those, 37 were generally popular, 4 were right at the 50% mark, and 21 were generally unpopular. That means, just like the previous year, we had more popular opinions shared than unpopular ones. Maybe that's a good thing. Every opinion shared by GoTime participants was expected to be unpopular, but hey, we agree with each other more often than we disagree. I like that. Okay, here is your top 5 most popular opinions shared on GoTime in 2023. Number 5. On episode number 266 called Is HTMX the Way to Go? Carson Gross said too many tech decisions are driven by people's fear of looking dumb.
My unpopular opinion is that in technology, a huge number of technical decisions are either made or not objected to out of a fear of looking dumb. So someone comes in with an architectural decision or some code decision or whatever, and it's crazy, you know? And there's a bunch of engineers in there looking at it going, man, that looks crazy to me. But if I say so, I'm going to look dumb. I'm going to look like I'm not smart enough to understand what they're doing. And so I'm going to keep quiet about it. And I think that that is a problem in general in technology. And it's understandable because it is a pretty brutal industry. We rely on our intellect quite a bit. And there's this, you know, there's ageism. And, you know, if you come across as not being intelligent, it can be really detrimental to your career. But I think that unfortunately, it ends up in a lot of situations leading to bad architectural outcomes and bad code outcomes because people are unwilling to say, this is too crazy. Let's do it a simpler way, if at all possible. So that's my unpopular opinion. You know, the fear of looking dumb ends up driving a lot of technical decisions.
A whopping 93% of pollsters agree with Carson. Fear of looking dumb has a nice acronym too, by the way. FOLD, fold. I guess you really do have to know when to hold them and when to fold them. And I'm going to fold them right now. Number four, coming from that exact same episode, Chris James, not to be confused with Rick James, got 95% of gophers to agree with his opinion that rather than starting a project by drawing 100 microservices on a whiteboard, just start with a monolith.
So imagine you start a new project with half a dozen developers, and the first thing you do is you write 10 Go interfaces describing the lumps of code that you think you're going to need to solve this problem. And then you divide them up between everyone and say, you know, go implement those interfaces and we'll stick everything together in a few weeks' time. You'd probably rightly question my judgment with this approach because surely this is premature abstraction. Like, how do I know that the design is correct? How do we know these interfaces are what we need? And is it not risky for us to work so independently at first? You know, we're not going to go into integration hell. And yet, there are loads of teams out there who will start a project with microservices. And that is just like what I just described. But it's even worse because it's a distributed system on top of all of these assumptions that you're making. So whatever mistakes you've made in your design are so much harder to fix than if it was just in a single code base. And my unpopular opinion, maybe it's not unpopular, I don't know, but I believe in a vast majority of cases, you should start, rather than starting a project by drawing on a whiteboard 100 microservices, just start with a monolith, just start with like one code base. Because if you make mistakes in your assumptions, it's so much easier to fix within a single code base than if you just scattered it into a million services. And if you can write a good monolith, then you'll be able to break it out into separate distributed services when you actually need to distribute this work. And I guess my second unpopular opinion on top of it, which is kind of the same, is like, if you can't write a good monolith, you're going to write a dreadful microservices architecture.
I left that last bit in the clip because it's probably as agreeable as his first take. I love you, Chris, but what you said there at the end is pretty much like saying, if you can't write good code, you're going to write bad code. Not controversial. Let's move now to the number three most popular unpopular opinion, which is that the best tool for the job isn't always the best tool for the job.
So my unpopular opinion today, Matt, is that the best tool for the job isn't always the best tool for the job.
What?
Now, what do I mean by that? Yes. How unpopular would that be? So,
yeah, saying something isn't the thing it is quite, it's going to be quite unpopular, I think.
Controversial, one would say. So as engineers, we always try and use the best tool for the job because we want to do a great job. Hmm. However, if you're paying for your own time, that's fine. But if somebody else is paying for your time, then is the tool that you're deciding the best tool for the job as a whole? I was made aware of this recently through an article that was written by a guy I do not remember the name of right now, who basically said that he had a new manager who came in and they wanted to implement, I don't know, like a queue or something. I can't remember exactly what it was. And so they were like, oh, well, let's go, you know, get this Kafka or like some technology that's designed for that.
Oh, I thought you meant the pool cue.
Oh, well, I mean, I'm a big fan of pool, big fan of playing
great.
Pool.
Yeah. Do you swim much?
Swim, I got a pool, so that's good.
Have you? Have you got a pool table?
No.
Have you got a pool, really?
Yeah, I've got a table next to the pool, but I don't think that's what you're asking, is it?
No, you have to put it in for it to count, I think.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll send you a photo later.
People living in Australia just having pools and that, would they? That's mad. Okay, sorry to interrupt.
That's all right. Where was I? Oh, yeah. So the new manager came in and said, well, what are you using currently? And I think they were using Postgres or something. And he said, well, for this use case, let's build it in Postgres. And the engineers were like, what are you talking about? That's crazy. But they did. And the reason why it was such a good idea was because it was a technology they fully understood. They had all the controls in place so that if something went wrong, they could deal with it. Based on their use case, it was completely adequate enough. Like it was more than they needed. So whilst it's not the best tool for the job, it was the best tool for the job.
That was Lee Anthony on episode 271, Cross-Platform Graphical User Interfaces. And despite him literally saying a thing is not exactly what that thing is, 95% of people agreed with him. Fascinating. That'd be like me saying good code isn't always good code and convincing 95% of y'all that I'm right about that. Actually, you know what? Now that I think about it, that doesn't sound impossible after all. Let's move now to number two and number one. Yes, we had a two-way tie for first place, which is really last place, isn't it? Both Ole Bulbuck and Johnny Borsico managed to score perfect 100s on agreement to their allegedly unpopular opinions. We'll give Johnny number one honors because his poll received more votes. So here's number two. On GoTime 264, long-term code maintenance, Ole Bulbuck boldly declared that he believes more than 90% of business software is legacy software.
I would estimate that business software, at least like more than 90%, is legacy, and that is almost no greenfield.
So your unpopular opinion is that this greenfield is not a thing almost ever?
It is kind of a thing, but it's possible, but almost nobody achieves it. It's a technical possibility that some people have given up to strive for, and others say, yeah, we might do this next year, and others don't have an idea where to look for it, even when they have the feeling that it could be a lot better. And they, I think this is the first step that you need to know what you want to achieve. You want to have everything cleaner, okay, and you can have clean code, which is a lot about details, but there is still something missing, even if you have everything technically according to the clean code book.
So if you have to put that into a tweet.
Okay. Then I would say much more than 90% of all business software is legacy.
And not greenfield. Okay. Yeah.
Or brownfield, whatever you want to call it.
We 100% agree with you, Ole. Maybe 90% was too low of an estimate. Had you said 98% of business software is legacy, that might have gotten at least one person to disagree. Okay, now the moment we've all been waiting for. Who will we crown with the most popular opinion, which technically means the absolute worst submission to a segment about unpopular opinions in 2023? You already know the answer. It's our very own Johnny Borsico's opinion that workshops must be hands-on, otherwise they're not workshops.
My opinion, whether it's unpopular or not, we will see. But my opinion is that if you have a workshop where none of the participants actually get to do hands-on stuff, that's a seminar, not a workshop. If you're doing most of the talking and most of the demonstration, that's a seminar. The people are just sitting there and watching you. That's not a workshop. So know and disclose what it is that you're going to, what you're going to be putting on. Is it a seminar where they just listen? Or are they actually going to be learning and doing stuff with the information that they're learning from you at the time? So yeah, workshops, not seminars. And I'm a big fan of workshops, hands-on, very hands-on. Not the let me talk at you for 4 to 8 hours thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like that's probably going to be popular, Johnny. Redo with unpopular opinions.
Yeah, whoever's workshop / seminar Johnny walked into at GopherCon, that's who's going to find it unpopular.
Yeah, now I'm wondering who you're referencing secretly. Yeah. But we won't get into that on the podcast.
It's like Bill Kennedy. He's like, Bill, you don't even.
Wow.
Why are you even here?
Oh my gosh. I would say... On the workshop topic, in my order, and I have ranked all the moments of GopherCon in order, I obviously had Kaylin and Me Lightning Talks, Rainbow Alliance. My second best moment was walking into Johnny's workshop because it was packed. Everyone was so engaged. I saw smiles. I saw like interaction between individuals. Sometimes you walk into a workshop, no, I'm not referencing anyone specific before you start grilling me, and it's a little bit dry. It's a little bit like the atmosphere's not there. It doesn't feel like it's an exciting environment of learning. Whereas in Johnny's workshop, I walked in and Johnny's amazing, always going to be amazing. But like the number of people in combination with Johnny's ability to really bring everyone along for the ride and feel make everyone in the room feel included, feel supported is a skill that like just needs to be upped in a public forum like a podcast. So if you ever have a chance to go to one of Johnny's workshops, please jump at that opportunity. I've said this about 7 times and I feel like I'm going to say it every time I have the opportunity. The reason I even go is because I went to a workshop that Johnny was running. That is the primary reason and the only reason that I was like, oh, this Go thing, I love it. So Johnny, you can thank or be upset at, was the reason I am in the Go community. So.
Wow, that is amazing. Thank you for that.
Wow.
My job is done. Anytime. My job is done.
Okay, friends, I'm here with a new friend of ours over at Timescale, Aphthar Suwathin. So Aphthar, help me understand, what exactly is Timescale?
So Timescale is a Postgres company. We build tools in the cloud and in the open source ecosystem that allow developers to do more with Postgres. So using it for things like time series analytics, and more recently, AI applications like RAG and search and agents.
Okay, if our listeners were trying to get started with Postgres, Timescale, AI application development, what would you tell them? What's a good roadmap?
If you're a developer out there, you're either getting tasked with building an AI application, or you're interested and you're seeing all the innovation going on in the space and want to get involved yourself. And the good news is that any developer today can become an AI engineer using tools that they already know and love. And so the work that we've been doing at Timescale with the PG AI project is allowing developers to build AI applications with the tools and with the database that they already know, and that being Postgres. What this means is that you can actually level up your career, you can build new interesting projects, you can add more skills without learning a whole new set of technologies. And the best part is it's all open source. Both PG AI and PG Vector Scale are open source. You can go and spin it up on your local machine via Docker, follow one of the tutorials on the Timescale blog, build these cutting edge applications like RAG and search without having to learn 10 different new technologies, and just using Postgres and the SQL query language that you'll probably already know and are familiar with. That's it. Get started today. It's a PG AI project, and just go to any of the Timescale GitHub repos, either the PG AI one or the PG Vector Scale one, and follow one of the tutorials to get started with becoming an AI engineer just using Postgres.
Okay, just use Postgres, and just use Postgres to get started with AI development, build RAG, search, AI agents, and it's all open source. Go to timescale.com/AI, play with PG AI, play with PG Vector Scale, all locally on your desktop. It's open source. Once again, timescale.com/AI.
Okay, now to the good stuff. But first, play that funky jingle, Matt boy.
I actually think you should probably leave.
Here's your top 5 actually unpopular opinion makers of 2023. Starting with number 5. It's Natalie Pisanovich with an interesting take on the usefulness of kitchens.
Well, my unpopular opinion is in the also non-software world, cooking. I think kitchens are overrated, and I think most households, all they need is a multi-cooker. Specifically, I can recommend for my personal use the Ninja Foodie. I forget, 16-in-1 or something, 15-in-1. I can like remove my kitchen. If it would be less of an effort, I would just throw away the entire kitchen, take one square meter, put the pot there, and that's it. That and the disher.
I think it's very brave of you to say this in the presence of two Italians.
I know. I'm sorry.
I mean, honestly, I was here thinking that if it can make pasta, I might be down.
It can do anything. It can make the sauce. Like, so today what I did is the sauce for tomatoes, like a vegan meatball. So I took the vegan thing, fried it there, then put the tomato sauce there, like everything in one pot, and then it goes into the disher. Not like, you know, if you have a special fancy pan, you'll have to hand wash it. You're going to have two pots, right? Maybe, no.
I'm Italian, one but cooker. I'm completely unable to cook. So
I'm actually also a terrible cook. I can cook pasta, by Italian standards, I'm a terrible cook. By US standards, actually, I would always like cook pasta and risotto and be like, oh yeah, like I'll cook dinner for everybody, don't worry. And like, and then people would be like, oh yeah, this is so great, this is Italian pasta. And I'll be like,
it's like Parmigiano.
It's
not like, Parmesan. That's what makes it pasta good.
Pretty much. The fewer ingredients, the better. So the easier, the better.
Exactly.
Out.
If this is your approach, a multi-cooker is all you need in life. Throw away the rest of the kitchen.
Turns out 81% of GoTime listeners won't be throwing away their kitchens anytime soon. By the way, Natalie shared that opinion on episode number 298, What's New in Go's Cryptography Libraries, Part 2. Okay, next up, number 4. Is Ian Lopshire saying sorry, Chrome and Firefox? He thinks Safari is the best web browser out there.
I might get some hate for this one.
That's
Safari
the
is the best web browser.
Oh, God.
It is.
I mean, I think it's great at downloading Chrome. I mean, I'll give you that.
I mean, as far as like web standards are concerned, it's objectively not the best. It's like very far behind the other two when it comes to implementing the web standards.
I agree with that too, but it is my favorite to use. It's the most ergonomic for me. It's the least memory hungry, the best battery life. All the things I care about, Safari has. All the things I don't really care about, it's not often I find a site that doesn't work in Safari, aside from this podcast recording website, but yeah, it's what I use day to day. It's my favorite. Is what it is.
I mean, I do kind of daily drive Safari, but I don't know if that's because it's the best or just because it exists in the Apple ecosystem, so everything is integrated very well with Safari. Everything just kind of works together in that nice little Apple magical way.
I think that one's gonna be unpopular.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
Yeah. Maybe
what about you, Chris?
Firefox is the best.
That was from episode number 283, The Solo Gopher with guest Ben Johnson. Good episode, bad opinion, according to 85% of poll takers. But not according to me. I, too, am a Safari fan. It is my daily driver, at least until Lady Bird is ready for prime time. We move now to number 3. This one was unpopular with 89% of respondents.
Syntax highlighting sucks and we shouldn't use it. That's like my that's my unpopular opinion. And now I will be much more clear than that. I will say that it's like, I don't believe that you should have no kind of like indication of things. I mean, maybe we can post a picture of it, like what I do, but like I have just basically black and white and like some bold and some italics here and there, but for the most part, none. So yeah, I feel like it has made me, I think maybe I read some like wanky, like think piece on it, like about 6 or 7 years ago. And then I just gave it a try. And I actually do think it has like, you know, made me better programmer. So.
That was Andy Walker on episode 276, Hallway Conf, a new style of conference. Yeah, that is a legitimately unpopular opinion, and I can't even understand why you'd hold it, let alone tell other people you do. Good on you, Andy. Next up, the second most unpopular opinion of 2023. It's Juan Andres Guerrero Sade. Guerrero Sade. Who goes by Jags? Because surely I butchered that like many people do. Here's Jags.
I don't know if it's an unpopular opinion. Well, I can make it an unpopular opinion in the context of this podcast, but like, I feel like Python 3.11 is trying to copy some of the better syntactic features of Go for relevance. And the part where I think it's an unpopular opinion is I could see a world where it continues or further dominates in like programming language market share by just stealing a couple of decent ideas and like continuing to live as the lazy person's scripting language.
So if you have to summarize that into a tweet that we can vote upon.
if I had to tweet this out, like 140 characters, just be Python 3.11 is going to kill Go. Which is
okay.
Which is probably going to make it high in the unpopular opinion board.
It's super unpopular. It's not that I agree with it, but I'm saying like if you just you steal a couple of ideas and then the laziest freaking programming language that most people use to like just kind of script their way out of a paper bag suddenly has a couple of like the nice features of Go, and you go, just stick around here until I'm ready to wade into the pool of being an actual good developer. I'm gonna just be cool over here, right?
Natalie was absolutely correct. When you put it like that, Jags, you will get 94% of GoTime's audience to disagree with you. And in fact, the man himself commented on the poll thread that he disagrees too. So there's that. Okay, without further ado, here is your number one most unpopular opinion shared on the GoTime podcast in 2023. TikTok is the best unbiased news source.
Can you like not tag me? Like, I don't know. I might deny later that I said this, but I think TikTok is the most unbiased news that we have available to us. That is my opinion. Ooh.
Interesting.
Don't at me. But cool. I would discuss it.
Spicy. I guess it depends on which TikTok you're on.
Yes, it does.
Because there are some TikToks that I'm just like, no. I don't want to be anywhere near that TikTok. Bring me back to my TikTok.
Yeah, yes. But I think you can find the most unbiased news on TikTok.
95% of gophers disagree with
Redacted.
They do not believe you can find the most unbiased news on TikTok. Congrats.
Redacted.
You are our 2023 Unpop Champ.
You've won a lifetime of yogurt. That's right. We'll fill your fridge with every type of creamy yogurt for years to come, ensuring you never run out of your favorite snack.
Void where prohibited or restricted by law. No cash value. Taxes and delivery fees may apply. Not an actual prize.
So people love their tools, and they usually love choosing them and discussing them. And sometimes it is great to see what exact functionality makes the choice obvious. And quite often, JetBrains IDEs come up in such discussions, and they're usually two. And today we're going to take a look at a couple examples where the code base, the tasks, and the developer benefit from IDE features to the extent that a purchase makes 100% sense. User 9302462 has this to say on Reddit, quote, IntelliJ, IDEA, and Golang takes a little bit to get used to, but all the features it includes makes it way more powerful than VS Code. My company uses TypeScript, and we wanted to do a refactor of 100 plus enums across 5 different repos, which means you can't just change the source in one repo, you have to do it in all repos. And the reason for the refactor is we had different devs working on different programs in order to meet a tight deadline, but there was no standard naming convention, which makes it difficult for the front-end folks to work with. No one wanted to take on this task, and it was kicked down the road for a couple weeks. I chose to take it on one day when there would be no more PRs or possible merge conflicts. It took me about 6 hours to change 80 plus values and function signatures across 5 repositories. Across those repositories, I committed changes to 135 files, including unit tests, with everything passing. Now, why did IntelliJ make this better? Why did this IDE shine? The search functions and refactoring ability are absolutely amazing compared to VS Code. Day-to-day use where you write 100 lines or more of code a day, not much of a difference, but when you need to do a lot of stuff fast and perfectly, IntelliJ is the winner every time. Side note, out of 25 plus devs, I'm the only one that uses IntelliJ, and when they saw those huge PRs, I looked like a god. They were completely amazed by it, even though in reality, I'm a slightly above average developer. So the $200 license that I paid for personally for IntelliJ saved me lots of hours, and I look really good to my company, which means for year-end review, it should help me boost my annual increase. So IntelliJ will actually put more money in my pocket because I can take on tasks that others see as impossible or just really, really hard. Now, regarding Go specifically, I do use it all the time in my own projects, which are all Go. Similar setup with the multiple repos and about 10,000 lines of code, which I have written by hand. So if I want to do a Saturday afternoon refactor of my code, it's really easy to do and doesn't feel like I have to climb a mountain. I can just drive up it. It still works, but there's way less mental resistance when it comes to making things better. That's why I choose JetBrains IDEs, end quote. Okay, a good next step is to go to jetbrains.com/go or jetbrains.com/idea. Either of those two IDEs are amazing. One for Kotlin, one for Go. Both amazing. Once again, jetbrains.com/idea or jetbrains.com/go. Enjoy.
Since I have you here, and since I spent way too much time reviewing way too many opinions from what feels like forever ago, here's a few bonus opinions for you. These weren't necessarily popular or unpopular. They are just ones I enjoyed stumbling across as I went through them all. First up, Joe Davidson on episode 291, Go Templating with Temple.
My opinion is that socks and sandals are actually an underrated combination. I think that for casual footwear, people are looking for like peak breathability. What's more breathable than a sandal?
Doesn't the sock defeat the purpose of that? Like, if you want peak breathability, you would not want to wear socks. Like, why are you wearing socks? And I don't understand it. No, that is unpopular with me. That is.
I'm on board here.
It's comfortable.
I mean, I would never wear sandals.
I can say after
I feel broke.
After all sorts of sporting events, I've taken off shoes and slipped on sandals, and it's so comfortable at that point. And for whatever reason, if you take the socks off, it's just not quite as comfortable.
Exactly. It just looks weird. It just
sure.
It's coming back. I'm calling it now. It's coming back.
I don't know that I'd wear it to an interview.
That utterly heinous opinion by Joe was popular with 67% of gophers, which is just nuts. Socks with sandals? Pick one or the other, please. Okay, let's do this one. Matt Boyle blew my mind with his strong yet completely inappropriate opinion that people should bring laptops to movie theaters.
I think you should be able to take your laptop to the movies or the cinema with you if you're in the UK, and you should be able to sit there and like program and type while you're in the movies.
What?
Yeah. That's kind of the reaction I get.
What's the thinking there, mate? What's going on? Are you not interested in the film?
How often does this happen?
So I think I've seen probably thousands of movies, but I couldn't tell you what happens in any of them because I usually sit and watch TV with my partner, like she's watching something and I'm just like working on a project or writing a book, apparently, mm-hmm. doing stuff like that. I love having the background noise and I love having something to look up at. I was like, oh, that's interesting. But I'm not necessarily that engaged with the film.
Right.
And truthfully, I struggle to sit there for like 3 hours watching something, especially if it's not very good. However, It doesn't mean that I don't want to see parts of the latest and greatest films. I think it'd be very nice to sit and watch the latest and greatest and see snippets of whatever The Rock is up to this week whilst programming away on my side project. And I feel like there's a market for this. I feel like there are other software engineers and other people who'd quite happily sit, not necessarily making a bunch of noise, but just have that sort of backlight on their laptop where they could kind of sit and work on something while they're watching the latest and greatest film.
Matt and I can find common ground on one point he made. Most parts of most of the latest and greatest films aren't any good. But that's the only thing I'm going to agree with you on that. Last up, let's throw a conspiracy theory in there. Why not, right? It's always nice to finish with a conspiracy theory. Here's David Wicks theorizing that maybe single-page apps aren't merely an accident in web dev's sordid history.
Mine isn't so much an opinion as a conspiracy theory, which I'd like to inflict upon everybody since it infected my brain a few years ago. And I call this the SPA conspiracy. The idea is this, that the reason that all of front-end development has moved over to FIT clients, JavaScript applications, is to make sure that we always have to have JavaScript enabled in our browsers, which make sure that the large corporations, who are, I should point out, the developers of these single-page apps, so they can track us. So basically, yeah. Google made Angular in order to make sure we turn on JS, in order to make sure Google tracking cookies could execute properly. Same for Facebook. You might notice that many of the other frameworks, I think of Svelte here, their original design was to show visual advertising to make sure, which also requires JavaScript to run. So there you go. There's my unpopular opinion. The entirety of the last 10 years of front-end frameworks is all there to make sure that Google can follow you on the web.
That is all for this week. Thanks for listening. If you haven't yet, check out Changelog News. It's the industry's only weekly newsletter that's also a podcast. One reader calls it so good, he considers it a competitive advantage. Read and listen to the latest issue at changelog.com/news. Thanks once again to our partners at fly.io, to our Beat Freak, the one, the only, the Breakmaster Cylinder, and to our longtime sponsors at Sentry. We love Sentry. You might too. Use code changelog. Save $100 on the team plan. Too easy. That's all for now, but we'll talk to you again next time on Go Time.